training. Well, today I want to do some deformation theory. So let me start by supposing well, eventually I'll talk about L infinity algebras, but let me start with a differential grade of E algebra. And let's assume for simplicity that such that HI, so the cohomology, is equal to zero if I is not equal to 1 or 2. So this is some of the most important applications I have in mind to satisfy this. So let me just give you an example. So say Y is a smooth projective scheme over the complex numbers, and say E is a vector bundle I'd say it's a the most important thing I want that it's simple, but I might as well say it's stable, which implies simple, which means that the endomorphisms, are just scalar multiplications. So this is H0 of Y. And the sheaf of endomorphisms and so let's say G is the sheaf of Lie algebras on Y. So I'm going to write this in Roman letters, not in script letters. So G is the sheaf of endomorphisms, but let's put zero. So the zero stands for trace free. So it just means trace is zero. So that okay, and then so define L. The degree P part is so the global C infinity forms of type 0P of Y G. With values in this so this is a holomorphic sheaf of holomorphic so it's a holomorphic vector bundle. So and then so the D is going to be the del bar operator induced from the wedge of forms and the Lie bracket on the sheaf of Lie algebras. You could say, so if I have a form tensor so omega is a DGLE algebra. So I have to apologize. In my first lecture, I was trying to do something similar, but instead of using the Dalbeau resolution, I used Czech resolution, but that doesn't work. That doesn't give you a DGLE algebra because well, you just write it down, it just doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't even give you an L-infinity algebra, because even in an L-infinity algebra, the anti-commutativity is supposed to hold on the nose, but it doesn't. So this Dalbeau resolution is better. Okay. Or you could make this a little more general, more generally. If E is not a vector bundle but just a coherent sheaf, as I also mentioned, and that you can take a resolution by vector bundles, a finite resolution. So, now let's do this. Then this is a complex, and then you get a graded sheaf of graded Lie algebras on Y, and then you do the same globalization, take the p-forms, and you get this DGLE algebra. So if Y is a surface, Hi, the cohomology of this DGLE algebra, by the Dalbeau theorem, is equal to Hi of Y G just this. So if Y is a surface, anyway, I took the trace-free part here to achieve that H0 of L, which is the endomorphism of E and 0. So that's because I don't want to get into any stacky phenomena. I mean, if I want to look at the modular space of E, it's only really going to be a scheme if E has no infinitesimal and automorphisms. Otherwise, it's a stack. So. And if Y is a surface, for example, then this Hi this is the case where E is a vector bundle. Right, so there certainly are interesting cases where that my assumption holds, or if Y is a Calabi-Yau threefold, that means that the holomorphic canonical bundle has been trivialized, then in this case, I don't need to be in the vector bundle case. It can be a sheaf, then in general, if I use serduality, it involves some twisting by omega, but in this case it doesn't. It just gives me this formula here. So that means just by this thing that x0 is 0, so x3 is 0, and all negative ones are 0, so all positive. So this means that we only have x1 and x2. So this is so let H be the cohomology of L. So I had so the transfer theorem to review said that if you choose a splitting of L as its cohomology plus something else, right, that led to this homotopy operator, which was always called eta. but the choice of the eta gave an L infinity quasi isomorphism. From H with these with its L infinity structure was defined in terms of all the summations over trees with the original DG Lie algebra. So the other assumption that I wanted to make is that these are finite dimensions. So everything's over C. So these products, these mu k, so those are they were maps of degree 2 minus k. They were alternating with k inputs. And so, right, as usual, I was going to think of this via the so-called décalage, the alternating turns into the symmetric, so these are these, so we get, so equivalently, we get the degree one maps. This was of degree 2. If I write 1 here, then it becomes, they become degree 1 maps. So in our case, where this H is concentrated in degrees 1 and 2, there's nothing else, then H1. Has been shifted. So, so if you're looking at the so in other words, we just have these QK. So now I'm going to just write H1, thinking of H1 as a vector space in degree 0. Right? Just, If I want to map from here to here of degree 1, the only way to do it is to take a symmetric power of something in here, which is in degree 0, and map that to H2. Anything else you try to define will, for degree reasons, land in 0. So this is all it is. So. So this is QK, just linear. I want to dualize this, so I'm going to denote the dual by star today, at least for. Before I do this, I wanted to take the. Right, these are the individual ones. Now I just take the direct sum here over all k greater than or equal to 1. So that's this. I still get this map here. Then I take the dual of that. So that's the dual of the symmetric algebra on H1, the symmetric algebra leaving out the degree 0 part. K equals 1 is there, yeah, sorry, k equals 0 is not there. That's what I meant. Yeah. Here I was thinking of H as a graded vector space shifted by 1. Here I just took H1 as a vector space in its own right. So this is nothing graded here anymore, just a symmetric power of this vector space mapping to this vector space. Well, let me I can just add this. So remember my notation here that this of anything was the symmetric algebra is sort of the thing. The algebra with its unit. This is the one without its unit. But I can just, I want to think of this. I mean, I can just add the zero map there. So I want to take the dual of this. So this is just a finite dimensional vector space. It's symmetric algebra. So that's just the polynomial ring and several variables. I take the dual of that. The dual of this. Yes, and that is the same as the symmetric algebra of the dual vector space and its completion. So this up there, you know, it's completion. Right, the symmetric algebra is a graded ring, so it has a this is a completion with respect to the positive, the things of positive degree. Right, the dual doesn't commute with the symmetric power because it's the way it is. So this is so I can think of this as formal power series in finitely many variables. me introduce the notation that A naught is the symmetric algebra on the stool space of H1, and A is the symmetric algebra on, right now I'm thinking of H again as a graded vector space, I just H1 is, this is in degree 0 and in degree 1, and I take the dual, I'm in degree minus 1 and 0, and I take the symmetric algebra on that. So this is a graded algebra in non-positive degrees, and this is its degree 0 part. And I want to define A hat is A tensor A naught hat. So I just complete with respect to this the degree zero part is just the polynomial ring. I take its completion and I tensor this. So this is the completion. So what was I saying? So this so this is, in other words, so this map here from this dual space to A0 hat. This, if I think of this A hat here, that's the alternating algebra on this guy over this guy. This map here, this map extends uniquely to so the map. So. Degree 1 and d squared is equal to 0. Okay, so well, let me write this down. right, this is basically a picture of a hat here. Okay. And the image of D defines an ideal in this completion. So so this is the quotient. So this, let's call this R. So right, if we choose coordinates, this A0 hat is just a ring of formal power series and finitely many variables, and here I've just this ideal is generated by finitely many formal power series, and so that's the quotient. And so it's a complete local ring, but I wanted to think of these I want to write down something else. So remember these guys here. So these are symmetric forms on multilinear maps, symmetric multilinear maps from H1 to H2. And so to this QK, right, we associate the corresponding K form. So this is a function from H1 to H2 by the usual formula. That, so if Z is an element in H1, then I map that to 1 over K factorial. So just plug in Z itself, K times. And there was a relation between the Q's and the mu's, which they differ by a sign, which if you... Because in this case, all the Z's have degree 1, you can just easily calculate the sign explicitly, and it's, that's a sign. So. I'm going to call F, so this is a formal sum of all these, so these are the forms that I call FK. Curvature. That's another reason for calling it F. And then so the formal spectrum of this of this R they wrote up there is actually the same. You can think of it as the zero locus of this F inside H1. So that's a formal scheme. So it's the my goal here today is to explain in what sense this this formal spectrum here, this R, or the zero locus of the curvature, represents the deformation functor. So I'm going to now talk about these deformation functors. And so so when you have a moduli problem, like the problem of vector bundles on Y, you can associate to this differential graded Lie algebra. It defines a deformation functor, which turns out to be the same one as the deformation functor of the moduli problem. But this this thing is also represented by this formal spectrum. So that means that the this transfer theorem defines formal equations for the modular space. And so at the point of the modular space, you get a formal neighborhood of the modular space out of the differential grade of the algebra. Okay. So, as an example, so M the modular space of stable sheaves as stable, well, sheaves or vector bundles depending on Y, let's say X, formal completion, of M at a point given by some vector bundle. Right, where X is I should have said that this formal zero, the zero locus of this F. Right, this turns out to be the formal completion of this modular space at the point. So, right, as far as the singularity of the modular space is concerned, right, you can describe it in terms of this F. So. Okay, so then let me start. I'll start first with a case of the differential graded Lie algebra because that's simpler than the L infinity case. So this is going to be a functor from I think it's enough to just take local finite dimensional C algebras. Actually, these are commutative with one. This, the main thing about these is that they're arching local rings, so I'm just going to write this category as art. The morphisms are local morphisms of such things. So for every such Artinian C algebra, we're going to get a set. So, and the set is going to be obtained like this. So L, well, in general, L is going to be L infinity algebra. For now, let's say just DGE. We're going to tensor L with MA and then take the Maurer-Cartan elements in that and then mod out by gauge equivalence. So I'm going to now, so that's this functor. And so now I'm going to explain what all this stuff means here. So first of all, I have to define nilpotent L infinity algebra. So I might as well do that for the L infinity case. So definition, and L infinity algebra is nilpotent if its lower central series algebra L is nilpotent if its lower central series F I L satisfies that it's eventually zero. So now I have to define this thing recursively. So F1 of L is L. Fi of L as sum over all partitions of I so I'm writing I as a sum of a bunch of things So it's the recursive definition. So for example, just to give you an idea, so F2 of L is mu2 of L and L. Well, the mu2, I often write this as bracket. So it's, just like in the case of usual V algebras. Well, so in this case, we can write, we have mu 3 it's basically every way you can plug in three elements into a tree, and okay, etc. So nilpotent if there is some n such that for if you plug in more than n elements into any expression, you always get zero. So that's the nilpotent. So just two examples. If Li is not equal to zero, only for I, so for positive I, and L, and it's also bounded, and also that there's only finitely many of the mu k, so mu k is equal to zero for k, very large. So this means that the L infinity algebras coming from algebraic geometry basically by the opposite process that I described at the beginning today, that I described last week, right, where these in algebraic right, geometry, if we actually have a scheme, not just a formal scheme, then right, then eventually these fk are zero. And so then we're in exactly in this case. So the L infinity algebras coming from algebraic geometry in some sense are nilpotent. They satisfy this. But if L is an arbitrary, L infinity algebra, like this differential graded Lie algebra that I talked about at the beginning, the deformations of a vector bundle, is certainly not not nilpotent. So, but if L is an arbitrary L infinity algebra, and M is a commutative nilpotent C algebra. Right, if it's nilpotent in particular, it's without a unit, then L tensor M is a nilpotent Lie algebra. Okay, so so I should just explain. So how do I make this tensor product into an L infinity algebra? So say the T's are in M, the X is in L. And if M is nilpotent, this is easily seen that this thing is nilpotent. The algebra, eventually, you know, these products have to be zero. Well, I don't know, just some stupid example. So let's say A, let's say A is the smallest such arch and local ring I can think of. Then I basically just get a copy of L back with E, except for so just a copy of L, but now if I compute mu 2 of x epsilon and y epsilon, I get mu 2 of x y epsilon squared, which is 0. So I get a copy of L, but I've killed all the higher products off. So so I just get L D complex with all brackets 0. But so if you C epsilon mod epsilon cube, then you get basically two copies of L, and this has been made into differential grade Lie algebra. The bracket then is still non-zero, but all the higher products are zero. Okay, so now we know what I mean by this, and we also know that it's nilpotent. Okay, so now I have to talk about the Maurer-Cartan equation. So, definition, let G be a nilpotent VG Lie algebra, and then I define MC of G to be the following set. So that's a set of all degree 1 elements satisfying this equation. Dx plus 1/2 bracket xx is equal to 0. So this is the Maurer-Cartan equation. And so these are called Maurer-Cartan elements of G. So just as a remark, if you want this to satisfy this equation at all, you can compute that the degree of x has to be 1, because if that is true, then the degree of x, this has degree x plus 1, and then this has twice degree x. Right, so you solve this what I want is to be able to compare these two, set them equal to 0, I need them to have the same degree. Okay, so that equation implies that the degree of x is equal to 1. Of course, when I add two things, the degrees don't add. I'm sorry. Okay, that's and okay. And two marcaton elements x, y are called gauge equivalent. If there exists an A in the degree zero part of the DGV algebra such that Y is equal to the formula N greater than or equal to zero, 1 over n factorial, add a to the n of x minus summation n greater than or equal to 1, 1 over n factorial, add a to the n minus 1 of dA. So where add A is this map. So we didn't really need that G with nilpotent to define the Maurer-Cantor set, this equation, but to define gauge equivalence, we need nilpotence. In the nilpotent case, these sums will be finite, because eventually these things will be zero. Symbolically, you can think of this as, this is the exponential of add, so it's add of the exponential. And this is formally equal to this. So this is the usual formula. For the gauge action of e to the a on G1. And I should remark that in the case that GI vanishes in negative degree, so that's the case for our vector bundle example, then we can make G zero. Remember, it's a nilpotent Lie algebra. The whole DG differential graded Lie algebra was assumed to be nilpotent, in particular G0 is a nilpotent Lie algebra in the usual sense. Then you can make G0 into group. By the Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff formula. And then you can actually think of this gauge equivalence as equivalent under a group action. find this action, and so on. Okay, so when did I define this already? So MC bar of G. Now we get a function as I've written down above. And this is the deformation function. Deformation functor associated to a differentiable E algebra. If XT has a pointed scheme, you can also define a deformation functor, namely so any such Artian local C algebra goes to the set of all pointed maps and these are local rings, so they have a canonical base point. This is a deformation functor. Or you can also define one if R is a complete local C algebra, then you about complete local C algebras in this context, but I can also think of this pointed scheme, say R or XP, pro represents the Day's deformation functor of G is functor is isomorphic to the one of the differential value of E algebra. No, just the scheme with a point. Yeah. I'm assuming the schemes are a finite type over the complex numbers, and I'm talking about c-valued points. I mean, I'm talking points, if I want to be precise, or more precise. Remark this R, at least, you know, if R is a localization of such a finite type algebra, I mean, R, or the formal completion. So this of X at this point are determined by their deformation functors. Usually is not at all. I mean, there's, of course, all kinds of stuff we throw away when we pass to this deformation functor. Then it only involves degree 0 and degree 1 part. So in some sense, we can think of the L-infinity algebra is I don't want to use the word derived. Yeah. I mean, that all is all coming. Yeah. So I should make a proposition here. So let L be as above this say X is the modular scheme, or at least some open neighborhood of the inside the modular scheme. I'm not talking about any global issues here of space of stable sheaves with its marked point E, right? I started with one of these guys, okay? And then, I guess I never introduced this notation, but it goes without saying now that F is a deformation functor of this pointed scheme here. Is isomorphic to the deformation functor of this BGV algebra. So the proof is, of course, some deformation theory. Maybe, and I'm not going to go over this proof in any detail at all, maybe just do a trivial remark here that let's just compare the values of these two at No, it's not nilpotent, but remember the deformation functor Right, so the deformation functor of G evaluated at this local arching ring is equal to the Malraux-Gartan set modulus gauge equivalence of G tensor as a maximum ideal, and this one is nilpotent. In fact, it doesn't have any higher operations at all. So I indicated this, right? This is just G with the differential, and forget about all the higher, all brackets whatsoever. Well, then it's, okay. The Malraux-Gartan equation vanished from the board, but it's dx plus 1/2 xx is equal to 0. So if this is not there, it's just dx equals 0. And gauge equivalence, well, you see, the only term that's left is n equals 0 here. Everything else isn't there. So it's just that, y is equal to, yeah, there's also, no, both have a first term. Here's x, and there's just dA. So y is equal to x minus dA. So that just means, this is just h1 of g. Well, and then that's a deformation theory that this h1 of omega well, in fact, you can use, if you have a representative omega, so that's some kind of omega. Well, I don't want to go into too much detail. Why don't I do this? And this one are sections of E. Write down this kind of formula. So, okay. And these are the infinitesimal deformations of E, and this set here is equal to the basically spec epsilon to this modular space. Okay. So it's really in this case this was a cycle representing it. I mean, really, what you want to say is that a vector bundle. So you want to deform the vector bundles. Usual thing. You start with this E, which is a holomorphic vector bundle. If you have omega and in this G1, you can think of that as E goes to A01 of E. And then, to say del bar 0 is the del bar operator of the holomorphic structure, the given holomorphic structure. And then, that is also a map from here to here, but it's not of linear over functions, but you know, it has the property of the del bar operator. So you want to define the new holomorphic structure, the holomorphic section of the new structure as a kernel of this guy here. And integrability is this condition here. So this way, the elements in G1 give you new holomorphic structures, and they are isomorphic if they differ by the gauge group action. But okay, that's the usual theory. But then you have to adapt this to this case of this of the tensoring with the nilpotent guys here, and prove that you get this result here. Okay. Okay, so the whole point is, of course, that we keep replacing DGV algebras by L infinity algebras, so now we have to talk about the L infinity case. So I have to consider something. So some form of variable t here is a polynomial ring, and then I add C of t dt, so just a formal symbol dt. I put this in degree 0 and that in degree 1. I define a differential, and then, a polynomial of t, of course, to that. So this is a differential graded commutative algebra. In fact, let's call it omega. Right, so. It's just the algebraic Durham complex on the one simplex, on the algebraic one simplex. Okay, so if L is an L infinity algebra, again, I can just, as I was tensoring with the Artin rings, I can also tensor with the graded commutative algebra, and this is also an L infinity algebra. The same kind of formula as the other one, except for I have to put in some signs. That formula is still there. I just have to put in the signs corresponding to what, you know, commuting the x's with the t's. Evaluating these polynomials at 0 and 1 give two morphisms. These are strict morphisms. There's nothing, no higher infinity contributions there. L is a nilpotent L infinity algebra. We define the Mallard-Cartan set of L to be the set of all x and L1 such that this curvature vanishes. Right, this Mallard-Cartan thing is the usual formula for the curvature. So this is the generalized, this is the same formula I wrote down at the beginning. I call this thing curvature. So that's the Mallard-Cartan set. So this is x. So at the beginning I was just had no way to think of it other than as a formal object. Well, now L is nilpotent, so this is a finite sum in fact. But, and it starts out, by the way, this thing starts out with minus dx and then minus 1/2 xx and so on. So in a case of a differential gradient algebra, I've defined the same thing as before. So this is the first thing. Second definition is that if I have two Mallard-Cartan elements, when are they gauge equivalent? The Mallard-Cartan element of this V algebra. Which is sort of like a homotopy between x and y, and alpha 0 is x, alpha 1 is y. And so take Maurer-Cartan elements modulo equivalence. And so then deformation function of the Lie algebra of the L infinity algebra. If I had more time, I would prove, just remark that if this is the same functor as before, because well, I already said that this in the differential graded Lie case, this breaks off here, so the Maurer-Cartan set is the same. What about the gauge equivalence? Well, maybe I this gauge equivalence still written there, so if so in the case that L is DG Lie, and X Y gauge equivalent, and A such a thing that this is true, then this alpha, this homotopy, the alpha, then you can use yourself proving this. So n greater than or equal to 0, t to the n over n factorial. So just throw the t to the n there. Same thing there. N greater than or equal to 1, t to the n over n factorial. Add a to the n minus 1 dA, and then I throw in plus a dt. It's a good exercise to prove that this alpha, and under the assumption that x is Maurer-Cartan, to prove that alpha is. Well, among all kinds of other things you have to use, let me give you a hint. doesn't make any sense to give you a hint without. I have to explain that if C from M to L is an L infinity morphism. Of no potent infinity algebras, you get an induced map on the Maurer-Cartan sets. And so for that domain, remember that so L is a nilpotent infinity algebra. So remember that meant that we have this co-algebra with its co-derivation. And this co-derivation satisfied that equation. So so I just want to look at this co-algebra here by itself, and I want to remark that every co-algebra morphism C so C is a co-algebra right, and the co-multiplication that's just the identity. Every co-algebra morphism is of course it's just given by the image of one, so it's just an element in here, and the element always looks like this. It is of the form n greater than or equal to 1, 1 over n factorial. For a unique x in L1. If x is in L1, this is x, the shifted x is in degree 0, and this is a morphism, so it has to take degree 0 to degree 0 part. And so they all look like that. That's not difficult to see. So this is a lemma up there. So that's just about the co-algebra. Now if I bring in this co-derivation, and the second lemma is that X is a Maurer-Cartan element if and only if Q of this Let me just write down the lemma that proves this lemma here. So X is a Mara-Katar element if and only if this element here, Q, kills that. So in other words, that this morphism respects the co-derivation, right? Here's the zero co-derivation, and there's the Q. So that gives maybe more conceptual way of thinking of the Mara-Katar elements. Okay, so let me just write down this last thing here. That was that Q of... So for any... So this results from the fact if you evaluate the Q, this co-derivation on this expression, you basically get the curvature times this thing. So that means that this vanishes if and only if this vanishes. So that's that fact there. So if I have a morphism, so L. So if P is my L infinity morphism, right, then I get this morphism of co of co-algebras which commutes with the co-differentials. Is really here. Here's QM. There's QL. And so now, if I have a Mara-Katar element, so it's basically a morphism, right, then this composition is zero, so therefore. This composition is zero, therefore that composition is zero. So therefore this phi of the Mara-Katar is again the Mara-Katar element. And then you just have to work out what this phi induces on L1. So if you work out the just give you the answer. Then you deduce that this map phi from M1 to L1 this map does involve all the higher operations of the L infinity morphism. But this means that as a corollary, so if L to M is an L infinity morphism, you get an induced functor. And the main theorem of deformation theory is that if that's what we call this def phi. So that when we pass from a differential grade Lie algebra to its cohomology via transfer, we haven't changed the deformation functor. So we haven't changed the formal scheme that we're looking at. Okay, so sorry for... Okay, so let me stop here and then... Sorry for going over time again. So then, yeah, I'll finish off on Wednesday with explaining...